Good morning, and once again, welcome as we assemble for the purpose of worshiping God. Once again, we do have visitors in our midst, and we are honored and grateful for your presence. We do want to invite you to come back and be with us at every opportunity that you might have to do so. I ask you to turn your Bibles this morning to the book of Matthew in chapter 23, where we are continuing a discussion dealing with the life of Jesus, and this is a rather extensive study that we have been engaged in over the course of last year as well as this year. And one of the things that I have noted in this study, and I continue to emphasize, is we ought to give considerable time to studying the life of Jesus, for in Him we find the example as to how we ought to live, and furthermore, the things that He taught are things that we ought to give application to in our lives. And, of course, as I've gone through this particular portion of our study over the course of the last couple of months, we've been dealing with what a portion of the study that I describe as the week that changed history. And, of course, that is the week beginning with His entry into Jerusalem in triumphant fashion, and the people laying down their robes, and they're ready to make Him king. And, of course, it will culminate with His crucifixion. Over the course of the last several weeks, we have been dealing with the discourses or the teachings of Jesus during this particular week. And I've spent considerable time with these studies, and as a result of that, it has caused me to, readjust my this particular study. I spent a lot more time on the things that Jesus is teaching than I originally intended to do. So what I am going to do as we continue this study is I'm going to break up what's left of the life of Jesus into two different parts. We are going to continue to study some of the things that Jesus taught through this portion of our study. That is, this week we're going to continue to deal with Matthew 23. Next week, I want to deal with the judgment of Jesus concerning Jerusalem in Matthew 24. And the following week, we're going to deal with judgment in general, Matthew 25. And after that, we're going to take a break on the life of Jesus for a few weeks. I know vacations are coming up with the summertime and such. And then we're going to resume and, Lord willing, conclude our study of the life of Jesus toward the end of this year. We'll resume it midway through September or October, something to that effect. So that's what my plans are at this time, just to kind of let you know what is going on. We're going to continue with this study. And I find it to be beneficial. And I do not apologize as I go through these studies, and I realize that there's so much to say. I don't know how to not say it. So that's why sometimes these things go into more lessons. For example, this is the third lesson dealing with Matthew chapter 23. Something I intended to have as one lesson, and it's turned into three lessons dealing with what you might describe as a study of hypocrisy. And the reason we've spent so much time is there's so much for us to learn from that. We need to ask ourselves, are we hypocrites in the way that we live our lives? And of course, that's the examination of this particular study. And of course, we've noted that that word hypocrite is from a Greek word that literally means to be a pretender. And it was a word that was associated with acting. It was descriptive of an actor wearing a mask, hiding whom he actually is. And of course, the concept of an actor is something that we're very familiar with in our society, even here in Southern California, where there are many who are famous in society because they act. That is, they portray roles other than what they are. And of course, that might be okay in entertainment. But when you're dealing with serving God, God has no tolerance for hypocrites. It is one of those things that is of the utmost of distaste where God is concerned. And that's why Jesus so strongly exposed the scribes and Pharisees in this particular text. And as we begin studying Matthew chapter 23, we find a definition of a hypocrite or description in these individuals. Jesus said, "The scribes and Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Therefore, whatever they tell you to observe, that observe and do. But do not do according to their works, for they say and do not do. For they bind heavy burdens, hard to bear, and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers. Notice how Jesus here describes them with their hypocritical behavior. They tell you to do one thing, and what they tell you to do, they don't do it themselves. Therefore, they are hypocritical in their conduct, and that is what is exposed in this text. And following that, Jesus begins to expose a number of different behaviors associated with the scribes and Pharisees in Matthew 23 that demonstrates their hypocrisy. For example, in verses 5 through 12, he talked about how they were self-righteous and how they loved the praise of men. They loved the places of honors and titles, and they would wear garments and they would wear jewelry, phylacteries and such, with which they would draw attention to themselves, seeking the praise of man. And of course, we noted in verses 13 through 15 how Jesus described that they would shut up the kingdom of heaven from those who were seeking as a result of their hypocritical conduct, as a result of their teaching and binding their traditions. And in reality, they were teaching a law that was overstepping the boundaries of God's law. It wasn't God's law. And those who followed the laws of men were going to be condemned. And that was the point. Furthermore, in verse 14, as it's recorded, and we talked about this last week, they exploited the poor. It says that they devoured widows' houses, which was a description of their greed and their selfishness and their corruption and thinking about themselves. Their hypocritical prayers. It said, for a pretense they made long prayers, thinking that they would be heard because of their many words. And of course, then we talked about their deceptive practices or teaching deceit in the making of vows. And what we noted there in verses 15 through 22 where Jesus talked about they would say if you swear by the temple, you were not obligated to do it. But if you swore by the gold of the temple, you had to keep that. And of course the point was is they could lie to people and those who were, shall we say, in the loop, you wouldn't get away with that with them. But you can lie to the Gentiles, or you can lie to ignorant Jews, and you would not be obligated to perform that which you promised to do because of the technicalities of the wording which you use. And we talked about those technicalities in our lesson last week. But we also noted that it's totally contrary to the teachings of God. God says, and Jesus himself taught, let your yes be yes, and your no be no. We ought to still be able to do business with a handshake and not have to kill two trees to make a contract to make sure that you pay that which you're obligated to do. But they were corrupt back then, and Jesus exposed that hypocrisy. And that brings us to where we want to begin our study this morning and go through the rest of this chapter. And that's my plans in this particular study here. And that is we want to deal where Jesus says here in verses 23 and 24, woe to you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. Blind guides who strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. Woe to you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you cleanse the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of extortion and self-indulgent. Blind Pharisee, first cleanse the inside of the cup and dish, that the outside of them may be clean also. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you are like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside they are full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. Even so you also outwardly appear righteous to men, but inside you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness or iniquity. So here you find this just description of Jesus identifying some more things about their hypocrisy. And the first thing that he notes here, and I want to spend some time talking about this, is it says that they tithe their seeds and their spices, but they neglected what Jesus described as the weightier matters of the law. Now, of course, under the old law, we find that it was imperative that they tithe. That was one of the principles that was associated with the nation of Israel. That is, they were to give God 10%, and shall we use the expression off the top? They were to give God 10% off the top of that which they had received. And of course, there was a whole lot more that they were expected to give. Well, the Pharisees had, in helping the people understand tithing, went so specific as to, I don't know if they actually counted their seeds or they weighed their seeds, but the point that Jesus is making is they would make sure that whatever crops that they grew, that they took 10% of that crop and they gave it to the temple or whatever it is that they did as far as that. So they made sure that they gave that 10%. Of everything, even the seeds and even the spices that they had. But Jesus said, in the process of doing that, you have neglected the weightier matters of the law: justice, mercy, and faith. Or the New American used the word faithfulness, which is associated with this particular word. Now, of course, the problem with what they were doing here is that they were teaching what you might describe as works without faith. They had an attitude where, you know what, as long as we meticulously keep these rules, there's nothing that we can do to be lost. God's going to be pleased with us as long as we keep all these little minor things about our rules. And of course, the problem was, and what we've noted as we've studied in Matthew 23, isn't it interesting how they hand-selected which rules they had to keep? You know, there were certain rules that, oh, we're going to keep this exactly. When it comes to tithing, which incidentally is an easy thing to do because God said 10%. You know, that's something you can measure. You want to tell me how to measure justice, mercy, and faithfulness? It's a little different story when you're dealing with that. But nevertheless, they would pick and choose which rules that they thought that they needed to meticulously follow. And they reasoned of themselves that God's going to be pleased with me if they do that. You know, I'm reminded of 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse number 12 where Paul there talked about how they justified themselves by themselves. They made their own rules. You know, I'm right because I say I'm right. This is the way I interpret this scripture, and according to that, I can do what I want to do. Or I can do it this way, and they manipulate the scripture so that it's okay for them to continue to do those things which scripture says they cannot do. So that was one of the problems associated with this idea of neglecting the weightier matters. And it's interesting how Jesus, toward verse number 25 there, as he describes them blind guides, he says, you strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. And what's interesting is if you go to the old law and you look at what was clean and what was unclean, certainly you wouldn't want to swallow a gnat in your drink. And so you pour your drink through a cloth and make sure that you keep out all the bugs. So God forbid you impurely drink one of those little insects. You realize, though, that a camel was also an unclean animal? And what Jesus is telling them is while you strain out that gnat to make sure that you have that minute detail when you drink your water, that there's nothing unclean in it, you sit there and you dissect and you carve up an unclean camel and you eat the whole thing. You choke on it. That's really the description that Jesus is making as he's talking about this tithing, these little things, and neglecting basically the principles that are behind why you do the small stuff. What exactly are the weightier matters that Jesus had in mind? When he mentions weightier matters, what is he talking about there? Well, he's talking about attitudes that have to accompany action. He's talking about motives that need to be behind why you do what you do. And Jesus mentions specifically three different attitudes here. Justice, mercy, and faith. And in Luke, I think it's either 9 or chapter 10, on a different occasion where Jesus said something similar, he talked about neglecting justice and the love of God. So those are the types of characteristics that you're talking about. Those are motives and attitudes that need to be at the foundation of everything that we do. Now, you think about this for a minute. What is that word justice? It's a word that means fair. It's a word that means to be fair in your judgment towards others. The idea is you do things properly, you do things right, and you do it without partiality. That's what justice is. Now, in looking at what we have studied just so far in Matthew chapter 23, I want you to notice that the things that Jesus has accused, I want to use the word not accused, convicted of, or identified as their hypocrisy, he said that you've devoured widows' houses. Is that just? Is that being just in the treatment of others? You have demonstrated prejudice toward others. And we've seen that prejudice as we've looked at them shutting up the kingdom of heaven from Gentiles and such, and how we've noted how they look down on specific individuals. Is that justice? What about double standards, where they bind heavy burdens on others, but they won't lift a finger themselves? Is that justice? Is finding a loophole so that you can get out of your promises justice? Think about it. They had neglected justice. Well, what about mercy? The word mercy is a word that means compassion. And the idea of compassion or forgiveness or kindness toward one another. Let me ask you, had they demonstrated kindness as they devoured a poor widow's house when you have a widow that she's not able to defend herself? They took advantage of her for their own personal greedy gain? Had they demonstrated mercy, again, in showing their prejudice toward others? Had they demonstrated their mercy with the double standards that they placed? And yes, these are some of the same things that I mentioned with justice. But you look at these principles, don't they apply to all of them? Jesus talks about us having justice in our own life, or mercy in our own lives. Jesus in Matthew 9 and 13 said, "Learn this, I desire mercy and not sacrifice." And here's another interesting passage. Turn over to James chapter 2 and verse 13 for just a minute here. James chapter 2 and in verse number 13. And in this particular text here, James says, and this is where he talks about not showing partiality in the assembly. He says, "Judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment." Now, what's interesting about that passage is, you know, we're going to talk about here in a couple of minutes about the importance of doing the little things. You know, the tithing and so on. Jesus didn't say not to tithe, did he? But there were weightier matters. Well, let me ask you, among the weightier matters that Jesus mentioned, are some of them more weightier than others? You realize that the word judgment in James 2:13 is the same word for justice in Matthew 23:23? So James is saying is that mercy triumphs over judgment. I want us to think about that when we start categorizing what's more important than something else. And is that really what this text is talking about? So you find there that they had failed to show mercy. And the third thing that is mentioned there is faith. And as I said, if you have the New American Standard, it uses the word faithfulness. And the Greek word here, the general term to pisteo is a very widely used term, dealing with faith as well as dealing with belief. But also it's dealing with being faithful or being honorable and honest. And as you look at this context, that seems to be more of what is in mind. That conducting themselves honorably, and certainly they had not done that as they had devoured widows' houses, and as they taught that it was okay to lie in certain circumstances, and as we described that last week, situation ethics. That's contrary to God's laws. You find in Galatians 5 and 22, among the fruit of the Spirit is faithfulness. That's the same Greek word. Revelation 2:10, be faithful until death. I will give you the crown of life. 2 Timothy 2:2, Paul told Timothy, the word that you have heard from me among commit to faithful men who will be able to teach others. Same word as what you find in Matthew 23 and verse number 23. They had not been faithful. They had not been honorable in their dealings with others, and they had not been honorable toward God. And therefore, they stood condemned. So when Jesus condemned them for neglecting the weightier matters, what He was saying is, your attitudes and your motives have not been what they ought to be. And one thing that we need to clearly understand is that motives and attitudes are, hear me, just as important as our actions. I want you to hear what I said there. I did not say motives and attitude are more important than our actions. Understand that clearly. Actions are important. What God tells us to do, we must do. But the attitude, the motive, has to be there. And it has to be a right attitude and a right motive. Let me give you an example of this. Under the old law, the children of Israel were commanded to offer sacrifices. And it was a rather rigorous thing that they had to do. Now turn your Bibles to the book of Amos, chapter 5. Let's get over here. Amos chapter 5. And I want you to notice as Amos is speaking to the children of Israel, or the Lord is speaking through Amos, this is what he says beginning in verse number 21 of Amos chapter 5. He says there in that text, I despise your feast days. And I do not savor your sacred assemblies. Though you offer me burnt offerings and your grain offering, I will not accept them. Nor will I regard your fatted peace and offerings. Take away from me the noise of your songs, for I will not hear the melody of your stringed instruments. But let justice run down like water and righteousness like a mighty stream. Now what I want you to notice in that context there is that the Lord says, I hate your feast days. I hate your sacrifices. The very sacrifices and feast days that God commanded they observe, now He's despising them. Why is that? It's because their attitude was wrong. It's because their motives were corrupt. It's because their lives were filled with corruption. And they rendered their sacrifices meaningless. It was not from the heart. So don't tell me that the old law was a law that did not require faith and faithfulness and a proper attitude. You look at sacrifices, you see that. In 1 Samuel 5, and in verse number 22, you read there, it says, has the Lord as great a delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams. That was spoken to King Saul when he was commanded to destroy the Amalekites. And he kind of obeyed God. You know, he destroyed most of them. Spared the king, spared some of the animals, and brought them back. And he said that they did it to offer them as sacrifices to God. Okay, let's assume that he is telling the truth there. He still disobeyed God, didn't he? And the command was to obey God is better than sacrifice. In Psalm 51, verses 16 and 17, a penitential psalm, David is writing this psalm as he is remorseful for his sinful conduct with Bathsheba and the things that resulted as a result of the consequences that came as a result of that. It's in this passage where David says, against you have I sinned. You and you only. David acknowledges his sins against God. And later on in verses 16 and 17, we read there, for you do not desire sacrifice, or else I would give it. You do not delight in burnt offering. The sacrifice of God are a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart. These, O God, you will not despise. Now, I want you to understand that David was not saying he did not need to sacrifice to God. But he was saying that the motive needs to be there, didn't he? And that's the thing to consider when we go back to our text. You have there an example of sacrifices and how the attitude needs to be there. Motives need to govern our conduct. And I can show you passage after passage after passage in the New Testament that talks about the importance of a proper attitude. Jesus in Matthew 22, 34 through 39. What's the greatest command? Love God with all your heart, soul, and mind. What is the second greatest command? Love your neighbor as yourself. Both of those are based on love. And then Jesus goes on and says, on these two laws hang all the commandments. Everything hinges on love, a proper motive. And isn't that what 1 Corinthians 13 says? 1 Timothy 5, when Paul tells Timothy to give instructions in Ephesus to them not to follow after fables and such, he says the purpose is to command from a pure heart. James 2, 14 through 17, faith without works is dead, being alone. And he goes and show me your faith without your works. I'll show you my faith by my works. And what he's saying there is you've got to have faith. You've got to have the right motive behind what you do. And we could go over and over throughout the New Testament and the Old. You can see the importance of a proper attitude. Motives have to be at the foundation of our conduct, or it's nothing to God. That 1 Corinthians 13 verses 1 through 3, you know, he says, though I have the gift of prophecies and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, but have not love, it's noise to God. It has to be there. And that's what Jesus is dealing with. Now let's go back to our text, and I want to ask a couple of questions as we look at this phrase, because I believe that this phrase is a source of abuse in the religious world today. You know, there are people that say, you know, as long as I'm sincere, as long as my motives are pure, I don't have to follow the details of God's command. Well, let me ask you, does getting the little things right justify neglecting the weightier matters? Let's go ahead and talk about that first. And what I mean by that is it okay to just say, you know what, I do all the little things. Therefore, God's going to overlook the other things. You know, let me give you an example of that. I faithfully attend the worship services. You know, I'm here every time the doors open. I'm here Sunday morning, Sunday night. I'm at Bible class. But you know what? When I'm here, I'm bored. You know, when the Lord's Supper is being offered, I partake of the Lord's Supper because I'm supposed to. But I'm thinking about where we're going to eat afterwards. Or I'm here, but you know what? I hate my brother who's sitting on the other side of the auditorium. I despise him, and when I leave, I'm going to avoid him. And I can barely stand being in the same room with him. But I'm here. I'm keeping the details. I'm not forsaking the assembling. Think God's pleased with that? Boy, that person behind me is a horrible singer. I wish it'd be quiet. Is that singing from the heart? Is that what you're thinking about as you sing the songs? That's just one example of what I'm talking about when I say here. Does getting the little things right justify neglecting the weightier matters? No, absolutely not. We need to be very careful before we start making that type of an application. Now, that doesn't mean that little things are not important. They are, which leads to the next question. Does motive nullify proper conduct? Again, look at the context. Proper motives motivate us to do the right things the right way. That's the point that is being made here. Notice what Jesus said there in Matthew 23 and verse 23. After he says you have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faith, he says, these you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. You are to tithe. Tithing was a part of the old law. They were commanded to tithe, and they had to do it. To please God, it was expected. They had to offer sacrifices to God. Because that was a part of the old law. And to please God, you did what God said to do. But I want to tell you right now. Just saying, you know what, I love God and I've got good intention. That's so I don't have to tithe. Is that pleasing to God? You know, the point that is being made here, you know, when somebody thinks about this, you know what, if the motives are where they ought to be, the little things are not even going to be a question. If you love God the way that you ought to, if you have justice and mercy and faithfulness as a motivation in your life, and you strive to have those attitudes, it's not going to be a question of whether I will be here when the doors are open. You know, somebody says, you know, God doesn't care if we use a piano. Even though, in the New Testament, every example of worshiping God is exclusively singing. Every example, Ephesians 5:19, Colossians 3:16, 1 Corinthians 14:15, go on and on with examples of it. What's the big deal? I mean, we're singing from the heart. What's the big deal if we add an instrument? You're stepping over God's boundaries. God gave you specific instructions and a proper motive. Just because you have a proper heart from the standpoint of you love God doesn't give you the right to overstep the boundaries that God has set for you. And that's the point. So when God says sing, because you love God, because you want to be faithful to God, you're going to say, you know what? God tells me to sing, and that's all He tells me to do. I'm going to sing, and that's all I'm going to do. As far as that. It's an example of that. Well, someone might ask the question about this. Does the weightier matters mean that at times we can set aside the instructions of God? You know, what we're talking about here is exceptions. You know, is this rule, is this passage actually saying that there are exceptions? You know, God gives us commands, but there's times when I don't have to follow His commands. Is that what He's really saying here? You know, and bear in mind, you know, you have a couple of passages. In Luke 15 and in verse number 4, where Jesus is healing on the Sabbath, He asks the question, if an ox falls in the ditch on the Sabbath, do you get it out? I'm going to tell you right now, it takes a lot of work to get that ox out, doesn't it? On another occasion in Luke 6, Jesus talks about how David and those men who were with him ate the bread that was dedicated to the priests. And David was not a priest. Those were exceptions to the rule. And in this lesson, we're not going to really deal with those exceptions, but I do want you to understand this. In both of those situations, the circumstance was extraordinary. In both of those circumstances, it was an emergency, wasn't it? Secondly, it was unplanned. Third, it was a temporary, one-time thing. And we could go on talking about that. But the point is, does that give justification for just setting aside God's pattern at all times? Think about that. Is Jesus in this text dealing with exceptions? No. We've already established that. They had neglected justice, mercy, and faithfulness with their conduct. And Jesus was telling him, your motives are wrong. He was exposing their failure. I'm going to tell you right now, if you're seeking to get out of the little details, you don't know what the weightier matters of the law is. That's not what this text is about. And furthermore, you know, in Luke chapter 16 and verse 10, there's an interesting passage there where Jesus says, Luke 16 and in verse number 10, Jesus says, he who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. And the point that Jesus is making there is he's talking about who can be counted upon. This is actually a parable. I believe it's a parable of the unfaithful steward. And that's a whole very interesting study within itself. However, the point that Jesus is making there is what's the point about, what's the importance of being faithful about the little things? If you're faithful with the little things, you can be trusted with the big things. So if God gives you instructions and you follow His instructions to the greatest detail that you possibly can, with a proper attitude, God can trust you with more. That's the point that is being made there. And that's what we need to think about when you're dealing with the weightier matters of the law. Now that leads to verses 25 through 28 of this text. And as I was first looking at this, it actually, in one sense, it's a different point. But in another sense, what Jesus is actually doing here is he's making application to what he just talked about. They were neglecting the weightier matters of the law, and they were hypocrites. And that's exactly what he describes there in verses 27 and following, where he says to you, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! You're like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful inwardly, beautiful outwardly, but inside are full of dead man's bones and all uncleanness." You realize that under the old law, if you touched a dead body, you were unclean. You were unclean. That's what he's calling these religious leaders. You are unclean. Inside, you're full of iniquity. You're full of wickedness. That's the description that he uses there. And he goes on and he also talks about in verse 25, which I think we skipped there, you cleanse the outside of the cup, but inside you're full of extortion and self-indulgence. Inside you are corrupt. And he goes on, you need to take care of the inside. What is the inside? The weightier matter, the justice, the mercy and the faithfulness. And when that's there, the outside will take care of itself. You'll do what the outside says. That's the emphasis of what he is saying there in that text. Now, of course, some observations that you might make as you look at this is you learn very, very quickly that you cannot hide from God. I think that's one of the points that Jesus is making there. You know, outwardly, men may think you're righteous. Boy, that was a beautiful prayer that he prayed. Boy, he must really be righteous because that black tree is so big that he's running into walls because he can't see with his eyes covered. Or whatever. And Jesus says, God knows your heart. God knows what you are inside, and you cannot hide from God. I'm going to tell you right now, that's a lesson every one of us better learn, and learn quickly. We may think that we're proving or fooling man. We may be in the eyes of men the most righteous person in the congregation. You know, most of us, probably all of us, look to somebody else in the congregation and say, you know, I wish I was like them. I wish I was as faithful as they are. And you know the reason we say that is because we know that we inwardly have some things that we need to change. We know that we're sinful. And somehow that brother or sister, the way they conduct themselves, they seem to be above that. But I'll guarantee you that brother and sister is probably saying, boy, I wish I was like so and so. I promise you. Every one of us is like that. But God knows what you are on the inside, and you better be ready for that. And let us also learn that our motives have to be motivated inwardly. You know, in 2 Timothy 3:5 there, Paul talks to Timothy about those who have a form of godliness but deny its power. That's the idea of what we're talking about here. They have a form of godliness. And go back to that 1 Timothy 1:5. The purpose of the command is love from a pure heart, a good conscience, and a sincere faith. Do we have that attitude? That's what Jesus was exposing in this context. And as He described them, the way that He did there, as whitewashed tombs. But then in our final statement we have, and I'm just going to mention this a little bit, and this is actually going to lead into verse chapter 24, dealing with judgment. The final thing we read as Jesus exposes them, beginning in verse number 29, is Jesus said, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! Because you build the tombs of the prophets and adorn the monuments of the righteous and say, if we had lived in the days of our fathers, we would not have partaken with them in the blood of the prophets. Therefore, you are witnesses against yourself that your sons, that you are sons of those who murdered the prophets. Fill up then the measure of your father's guilt, serpents, brood of vipers. How can you escape the condemnation of hell? Therefore, indeed, I send you prophets, wise men, and scribes. Some of them you will kill and crucify, and some of them you will scourge in your synagogues and persecute from city to city, that on you may come all the righteous blood shed on the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, son of Berechiah, whom you murdered between the altar and the temple. Assuredly, I say to you, all these things will come upon this generation." After exposing their hypocrisy, the final thing that Jesus noted about them is, you know what? You sit there in your self-righteous attitude saying, our fathers were wrong for killing the prophets. And as a matter of fact, they actually wanted to recognize the godliness of those prophets whom their ancestors had killed. So they built monuments to them. Kind of as a memorial. You know what? We don't kill the prophets of God. And in so doing, they were acknowledging that it was the prophets of God that their forefathers had killed. And of course, they can say to themselves, you know what? Had I been there, I wouldn't have done that. You ever hear somebody say that? You know, I love young people who are thinking about getting married, or who are married, and they see mommy and daddy struggling with a child, and they say, when I have a child, my child's not going to do that. Well, a lot of parents are laughing because we know better, don't we? You're going to be eating your words, and when you eat your words, they are going to become bitter. Well, these arrogant leaders are saying, you know, we wouldn't have killed Jeremiah or whoever. Well, we wouldn't have killed I can't even think of the names of the prophets. Well, you've got Abel. You've got Abel mentioned here, and you've got Zechariah among others, but numerous prophets. We wouldn't have killed them. You know what Jesus says to them? You're guilty of the very same thing. You're guilty of the very same thing. As a matter of fact, he says, you're going to do what they did, and you're going to fill the cup to the point where God's going to be completely done with you and wipe you out as a nation. And that's what Matthew 24 is about. Now, there's one more point I want to observe real quickly as we wrap this up. As Jesus says in verse 32, you know, Philip, then the measure of your father's guilt, serpents, brood of vipers. How can you escape the condemnation of hell? But I want you to notice in verse 34, he says, therefore, I send you prophets and wise men and scribes. You realize what Jesus just said there to these leaders? I am going to send you prophets. You know what Jesus is claiming? Remember what I said all along about this? Jesus is in control. That's exactly what He's doing here. You know what? You self-righteously said you wouldn't kill the prophets. But I'm going to tell you right now, I am going to be sending prophets. And in so doing, He was saying He's the Son of God. It's exactly what He was claiming there. I'm going to send wise men. And you're going to kill them. And you're going to crucify some of them. And not only was Jesus saying what He was going to do, He was prophesying to them what was going to happen. They had fair warning. So when they saw to it that James was executed, when they stoned Stephen, and those are some of the examples we have recorded, and they killed others, Jesus told them, that's what you're going to do. And when you're warned and you do it anyways, is there any excuse that you can make as you stand before God? Of course, we know the answer to that. And that would lead to their condemnation. Friends, it's not enough to be religious. It's not enough to claim to be religious. You have to have a proper attitude. You have to obey God with a proper attitude. And may we guard against arrogance in our lives. In 1 Corinthians 10:12, you read, therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. Let us learn from the hypocritical leaders whom Jesus had to deal with not to be hypocritical in our own lives. Well, the lesson is yours and I.